Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So today, we're doing something a little different. Usually, we look at the software that runs on your computer. You know, the apps, the tools, the things you click. But today, we're looking at the thing that, well, is your computer.
The operating system.
Right. And I think for most of us, the OS is just, it's background noise, it's digital wallpaper. You turn on your machine, you see the Windows logo or the Apple logo, and you just ignore it until it forces an update at the worst possible time.
Right. But we've got a stack of technical guides here, modern operating system categories and system logistics, and they paint a very, very different picture.
They really do.
The takeaway from these sources isn't just about code or version numbers. It's about control. I mean, the OS dictates what you can see, what you can touch, and this is the big one, what the hardware you paid for is actually allowed to do.
That's what really caught my eye, this idea that the software is artificially throttling the hardware. It feels a bit like finding out your sports car has a governor on the engine that keeps it under 60.
That's a perfect analogy, because the operating system is this invisible layer governing everything from massive servers running the internet to that phone right there in your pocket. And if you don't get how these systems live, breathe, and eventually die, you are just flying blind.
So our mission today is to move beyond just clicking on icons. We're going to try to decode the different species of operating systems, figure out why end of life is a phrase that should genuinely terrify business owners, and look at the surprisingly complex logistics of actually getting the software onto the hardware.
And what's fascinating is that we're in this massive transition period right now. We're moving from the old way of thinking, where the OS was this precious thing you nurtured,
right,
to a stateless future where the hardware almost doesn't matter.
Okay, let's unpack that. The source material breaks operating systems into four big buckets. We've got server, workstation, mobile, and cloud-based.
Mm-hmm.
Now, server and workstation get thrown around a lot, but there's a hard line between them here. And it's not just about how expensive the computer is.
No, not at all. You could have a $5,000 gaming PC and a $5,000 server, and the silicon inside might look almost identical. The difference is process optimization.
Which means what, in plain English?
Okay, think of a busy restaurant. The workstation OS, that's your Windows 11, your Mac OS, it's the dining room. It's optimized for foreground processes.
The stuff you're looking at.
The stuff you're looking at, exactly. Mm. You move your mouse, the computer drops everything to make sure that cursor moves smoothly. It's designed to flatter the user.
So if the workstation is the dining room, the server is the kitchen.
It's the kitchen, the back of house. A server OS doesn't care about graphics. It doesn't care if the interface is pretty or if the mouse lags. Its only job is to serve background services, files, databases, applications to hundreds, maybe thousands of clients at once. It's all about throughput, not aesthetics.
And here's that throttle I was talking about. The source notes a specific limit in workstation versions of Windows. It says they're limited to what? 10 concurrent users for file sharing?
That's a key detail. It's a hard-coded limit.
So say I have a super powerful desktop. I've got the RAM, fast hard drives. I want to use it as a file server for my office of 50 people.
The hardware can handle that, right?
The hardware can absolutely handle it, but the operating system will stop you. It'll just say, nope, I'm a workstation. I only talk to 10 people at a time.
That feels so arbitrary. Why?
It's market segmentation, pure and simple. If you want to run a server for 50 people, Microsoft wants you to pay for a server license, which costs a lot more than a Windows 11 Pro license. They artificially gate the capability to force you up into the right bucket.
Capitalism at work, right in the code.
Precisely. It prevents a business from running its entire infrastructure on a cheap laptop.
Yes. Okay, so that's the traditional divide. But then we have the two newer buckets, mobile and cloud-based.
Mm-hmm.
And the source uses a term for the cloud category that sounds very philosophical, stateless.
It's a concept that is actively reshaping the IT world. I mean, right now. And as I understand it, stateless just means the device itself has no memory, or the memory doesn't matter. The data lives in the cloud. Chrome OS is the poster child for this, right?
It is. If you're using a Chromebook, your documents aren't on the hard drive, your settings aren't in some local file, they're all in the Google Cloud. If you drop your laptop in a river, you haven't lost anything. You just buy a new machine, log in, and the state of your computer is downloaded instantly.
And this leads to that really brutal analogy in the source material, the shift from pets to cattle.
It sounds harsh, doesn't it? But it's the only way to manage at scale.
Explain that, because it really changes how you look at your own laptop.
Okay, so in the old days, the pet era, your computer was special. You gave it a name, You customize the wallpaper. If it got a virus, the IT guy would come over and spend like 4 hours nursing it back to health.
Because setting up a new one from scratch took all day. You had to install the OS, then the drivers, then Office, then email.
Exactly. It was a high-value asset. But with stateless systems and MDM mobile device management computers are cattle. If a cow in a herd of 10,000 gets sick, you don't send it to a special hospital.
You don't.
In the digital sense, if a Chromebook or a managed iPad glitches, you don't fix it. You wipe it, you re-image it. You press a button, the cloud wipes the device and reinstalls a fresh, perfect copy of everything in minutes. It's ruthless, but it's efficient.
And even Windows and Mac OS are moving this way with tools like Intune. The goal is just to make the hardware irrelevant.
Correct. The OS becomes a service, and the hardware is just a temporary vessel for it.
Okay, so we've got our buckets. Let's do a quick tour of the major players. We know the big two, Windows and Mac OS. But the source spends a lot of time on Linux. And I feel like Linux is always that thing people have heard of, but they think it's just for hackers and hoodies.
That's the stereotype, for sure. But the reality is, you just can't talk about modern computing without Linux. It runs the internet.
It's described in the notes as the Rebel Alliance of operating systems.
In a way, yeah. It was built in 1991 by Linus Torvalds because he wanted a version of UniNix he could run on his own PC. He couldn't afford the expensive enterprise stuff, so he just built his own.
And the magic of it is that it's modular. It's not a monolith like Windows.
Right. The source highlights this. The kernel is the engine. You can build whatever car you want around it. You want a sleek sports car? You build a desktop like Ubuntu. You want a massive freight train? You build Red Hat Enterprise Server. You want a tiny scooter? You build Android.
That's the wild part I think people forget. Android is Linux.
Under the hood, yeah. Which, you know, makes Linux the most popular OS in the world, even if most people never see a command line.
Speaking of mobile, there was a bit of a graveyard section in the notes. We have to pour one out for Windows Phone.
Oh, the cautionary tale.
The source treats this as a huge strategic failure. I mean, Microsoft, the king of the desktop, just could not crack mobile. They bought Nokia in 2013. They had the hardware, the money. Why did it fail?
They tried to force the desktop way of thinking onto the phone. They had the tiles and the OS, but they didn't have the ecosystem.
The apps.
It's always the apps. Nobody built apps for Windows Phone because nobody had Windows phones. And nobody bought Windows phones because there were no apps. It was a death spiral. You can have the best OS in the world, but if I can't get Instagram or my banking app, it's just a paperweight.
And the ultimate surrender is right there in the notes. The new Microsoft Surface phone. It runs Android.
That's the if you can't beat 'em, join 'em moment of the decade. It just proves that the ecosystem, the developers, the store is more powerful than the code underneath.
Okay, we need to shift gears to something that sounds boring but is actually incredibly high stakes, the OS lifecycle. Because reading this section, I realized that software rots. It doesn't physically decay, but it becomes toxic.
That is a great way to put it. An operating system isn't a statue. It's a living organism. It has a birth and it has a death.
The source outlines the birth phases. Alpha, beta, release candidate. We've all heard of beta testing. That's finding the bugs. But the scary part is the end of life. The source calls the extended support phase hospice care.
It is. When an OS enters extended support, all the fun is over. No new features, no gadgets. You're just getting critical security patches to keep the heart beating.
Yeah.
But once that final end of life date hits, you pull the plug.
But admins love to hang on, don't they? I mean, people see it on Windows 7 forever. They skip Windows 8 entirely.
That skip phenomenon is very real. People hate change. But the source highlights why that is such a dangerous mindset. It's the zero-day problem.
Walk me through that. The day after support ends, let's say Windows 10 hits its final date, what happens the next morning?
The next morning, a hacker discovers a brand new hole in the code, way in. In the past, Microsoft would have patched that hole within days. But now...
Nobody's home.
Nobody is home. The lights are off. Microsoft is not releasing a patch because the product is dead.
So the hole just stays open. Forever.
Forever. Any hacker in the world can now just walk right into your system. And it's not just about getting hacked. The source mentions the legal aspect. If you're a business, a hospital, a bank, and you're running an unsupported OS, you are likely voiding your insurance. You are non-compliant.
So if data gets stolen, it's not just theft, it's negligence.
Exactly. You can be sued into oblivion because you were running software that was effectively dead.
That makes the upgrade cycle feel a lot less optional. So let's say you scared me, I'm ready to upgrade. The next hurdle is, can my hardware even handle it?
And this brings us to the Hardware Compatibility List, or HCL.
Which, according to the notes, is sort of a relic now.
It's a relic in the sense that Microsoft stopped publishing one big list. Since Windows 10, they basically said, this is the vendor's problem now. So you can't just look up a master list from Microsoft. You have to check with Dell, HP, whoever made your component.
And the source makes a great point. Just because it's not on the list doesn't mean it won't work.
Right, but it means it hasn't been tested. You're flying completely blind. If you install Windows Server on a machine that isn't on the HCL and it crashes, Microsoft support might just hang up on you.
And then there are the system requirements.
Yeah.
The source had a funny take here. It listed the minimum requirements for Windows and then said, Microsoft is nothing if not optimistic.
That is a very polite way of saying the minimum requirements are a trap.
Like, sure, the car can drive with three wheels, but you are not going to enjoy the trip.
Exactly. The rule of thumb for any tech is to treat the recommended specs as the actual minimums. If you try to run Windows 11 on the absolute bare minimum, you're going to spend half your day watching a loading circle.
And Windows 11 seems particularly picky. The source mentioned some hard stops on security hardware. The TPM chip.
Yes, this caught so many people off guard. Windows 11 requires a TPM 2.0 chip trusted platform module. It's a dedicated chip on the motherboard that handles encryption keys.
It's like a bouncer for your computer.
It is. It ensures the system hasn't been tampered with before it even boots. But if you have an older computer that runs Windows 10, perfectly fine, it's fast, it's capable, but it lacks that one chip. You literally cannot install Windows 11. It's a hard gate.
That's going to send a lot of perfectly good hardware to the landfill.
Unfortunately, yes. But from a security standpoint, it's becoming necessary.
Okay, so we've established the category, we've checked the life cycle, we've confirmed the hardware. Now, logistics. How do we get the bits onto the drive? The source basically declares the optical disc dead.
Rest in peace, CD-ROM. Yeah. The reality is optical media is just too slow and too small. Modern OS installers are huge.
And it's all USB drives now.
For a home user, yes. But even that has risks. The source mentioned that vendors often lock USB drives so they can't be overwritten.
Yeah, that was interesting. Because people lose them, or they accidentally format them to save vacation photos or something.
Exactly. But imagine an enterprise. You have 500 computers on three floors. You are not going to run around with a USB stick. You'd wear out your shoes.
All right, so you use the network.
Yeah.
And the notes distinguish between push and pull installations.
Think of push like force feeding.
Aggressive.
It is. You, the admin, sit at your server, you select 500 computers and say, you will install this update tonight at 3 a.m. You use a tool like MECM Microsoft Endpoint Configuration Manager. It uses a little agent program on every computer to report back.
So the computer has no choice in the matter.
None. The agent says, yes, sir, installs the software and reports back. Mission accomplished. It's great for compliance. You know everyone is secure.
And pull.
Pull is like a buffet. You put the application on a table, usually via group policy or a corporate app store, and you tell the users, it's there if you want it.
Hey, the new Adobe Reader is available.
Exactly. The client computer checks in, sees the app, and pulls it down. It's friendlier, requires less heavy infrastructure, but the downside is you don't always know who has eaten.
Right. You have less reporting. You don't know if Bob in accounting actually installed the update or if he's just ignoring it.
Precisely.
There's one final concept in the source that I think separates the amateurs from the pros. It's called the ripple effect. Basically, just because you can install something doesn't mean you should.
This is the difference between a technician and an engineer. A technician asks, will it install? An engineer asks, what happens after it installs?
Give me an example of a bad ripple.
Okay, network impact. The source uses the example of a security camera system, an NVR. You install the software, you add a few cameras, everything looks fine. But then you decide to add 10 more HD cameras.
It's just video, right? What's the big deal?
But video is heavy. It's a huge stream of data. Suddenly that video feed is eating up all your bandwidth. And if that traffic is sharing the same pipe as your internet, you might have just killed the connection for the entire office.
So the sales team can't send emails, the phone stopped working.
All because you added some cameras. Technically, the software installed correctly. Operationally, you just cost the business thousands of dollars.
Or the business impact. The source mentions updating critical systems.
Right. Imagine installing a massive update to your point of sale system during the lunch rush. The system has to reboot.
Disaster. A line of customers and no way to take their money.
Exactly. You have to think about how the application interacts with the hard drive, the network, and the actual humans trying to do their jobs. It's the measure twice, cut once rule of IT.
It's a complex ecosystem. We've covered a lot of ground today. We started with the kitchen versus dining room of server and workstation. We moved to the cattle management of the cloud. We looked at the legal risks of ignoring the life cycle and the logistics of push versus pull.
It really highlights that the OS is the foundation. We take it for granted, but it's this complex system that needs active management. You can't just set it and forget it.
And with stateless systems, that management is shifting from fixing individual boxes to managing these massive fleets. So here is a final thought to chew on. We talked about how we're moving towards stateless operating systems, where your data and apps live in the cloud and the device is just a screen. If that trend continues, are we moving toward a world where personal computing doesn't actually exist anymore?
That is the big question, isn't it?
If the OS is just a service you rent and the hardware is just a disposable terminal, what happens to the concept of digital ownership? Are we all just becoming tenants in our own digital lives?
And who holds the keys when the internet goes down? Or if your subscription lapses, does your digital life just evaporate?
A terrifying thought to end on. Thanks for listening to this deep dive into the brains of the machine. We'll catch you next time.